before you got called.
Not that phrase.
OM. OM. Transfer your risk of Bristol to lifelong colleges. Lifelong.
She too.
Absolutely. Like you. Like Thomas. Which can tell you which? Yes. Thomas must have made her.
Yes.
She was a daughter, you know, she was. Crowfoot's daughter. Archaeologist.
Oh.
Working Palestine.
Is she Thomas alive?
Of course.
Ah, she is not the daughter of Hodgkin. Ah, I saw.
Widow.
I see, sister, I see. So no, I thought she was the daughter of the old Hodgkin.
No, no.
The sister of Thomas.
No, no.
I see, I see.
She's the wife, daughter of Crowfoot.
I see.
He used to be an archaeologist.
Yes, of course.
In Palestine in the 30s.
Yes, of course.
That's where I met. I see. When he was secretary of the Archbishop. Remember?
Yes.
But already communist.
Yes, crypto.
Wasn't a crypto. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that was serious. She's a very nice woman.
Mm-hmm.
Her communism doesn't come from her.
Yeah, of course.
She's Chinese. Her was a Chinese academy.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Russian academy. It said so. Who else? Then he chose Iris Murdoch because she was quite famous and no longer at Oxford, but nevertheless Oxford. And then he chose Nicholas Anderson simply as a friend.
Yes.
He knew he shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
He felt some guilt. Yeah. He thought it wasn't right. He doesn't deserve it. But in the end, well.
Do you mind personally?
Very well.
Because lately he's been I highly praised from all quarters.
Nicholas?
Yes.
No. No. And I knew him as a boy.
Yeah.
He was son of a warden of all souls.
Uh-huh.
He was warden of female souls. I knew him as a schoolboy.
In St. Paul's?
No. Because I knew his father.
Ah, yes.
I knew his father, who was a professor at all souls. After the war. He was a research fellow before the war. Hubert Johnson. The Xavier Dog ever called a nation in those days. He was a difficult boy, because of rebellious, rather bohemian, communist inclinations, went to Harvard College, which is not the best, and got a third. And the father went with the economist attached to Moyne, when Moyne went to the West Indies,
I see.
To make a report. Yes. Henderson wrote it.
I
mean, in Kach, he said to Moyne, he said, I need a secretary. Well, I've got a boy. My job is it. So he took him instead. With him, he moved to the Foreign Office in 39, of course. Still, he served him during the war, not in Cairo.
Not in?
Cairo.
No.
He didn't go to Cairo.
For a short while he was in Cairo.
Henderson?
Yes. For a short
while.
I can't remember.
He was mine secretary.
Possibly.
But then he didn't stay there.
Then he was with Eden and then Bevin.
No, that's after the war.
Yeah. And
after the war.
So during the war.
You know.
He was a close friend of Bill Dickin, so I thought that it was from the Cairo days.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Maybe. Not very close.
No.
Not very close. Mm-hmm. Married Greek. Greek later, half Greek.
Mm-hmm.
And then he came back and he did the exam in the Foreign Office and failed. Mm-hmm. And then the second time, got through.
Yes.
After that, he didn't go back. Then he became private secretary.
Yeah, of many ministers.
Of everybody.
Yeah.
Then he wrote this book about foreign secretaries.
Yes.
He wrote a book.
Yes, a very short one. Very short one.
Praises everybody.
Yes.
Everybody's praises.
Everyone
at once. Then he went to Poland. Didn't think it was the best one. Maybe he was the way there. Went somewhere else first. Not to them. Then he went to Poland. Then to Germany.
Yes.
Then to Paris.
And after retirement, he went to Washington.
He made some sort of splendid speech about Falklands. Splendid glorious
life. I see.
And he's now the head of the Prince of Wales's office in the Duchy of Cornwall. the United States. Frank is the most organized. He's a bodybuilder, likes with girls. Not a very faithful husband. Clever music man.
That's a, I met him once, I mean, 25 years ago when I was interviewing
him. Clever music man.
Yeah.
Not very solid.
Yeah, I see.
But clever music. Quick music. It's not cynical. Then why do people praise him?
For
I know him very well.
I mean, in diaries, when I came across his name, the last diary I read was Colby's Diary of the Warriors in Churchill, Jock Colby.
Yes.
And, well, when he mentions him,
that
he's very intelligent. I mean, he plays an intelligent lawyer, everything, you know.
Where did you find him?
Colby? At the time, I can't remember, but the first time he mentions him, it's quite gossipy. Jock Colville was madly in love with Gay Margeson, the daughter of Margeson, Marty's wife. And apparently, Nicholas Henderson was also madly in love with her.
That was 14 other people.
In love with her.
And 14 others.
She.
No,
he, I see. But he once confessed to Colville that if Gay will not marry him, he will never marry. And Colville replied the same with me, and both married other lady and happily married. But
okay. I remember her very well before the war, Gay.
Yeah.
When she was so gay.
Yes.
She wasn't that attractive.
I mean, and you see,
nice old lady.
Pardon?
No.
Yes.
She's a kind of nice old lady.
Yes, no more. But apparently when she was young, she had radical ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Colvin discusses the conversations with her.
She was in Oxford in 1939.
Yes.
Not as a student.
And he describes going with her to the meadow and speaking about, quarreling about socialism and everything.
Nothing really.
That's what I thought. I mean, I know her well.
Given Colville was a reaction.
Yeah.
Pro Chamberlain.
Yeah.
Anti Churchill.
Says
all that.
Yeah.
To him she may have appeared radical. The radicalism
didn't
go very deep.
He's very candid in his memoirs.
For Colville, yes.
He is very candid.
I think he is.
And that I mean it two huge volumes. It takes time to read. But you find very interesting small passages, that's all. I mean, but for me, it's worth
it. He's not very interesting.
No, I know. I know. He wants to have the reputation of an intellectual.
Well, intellectual, no. Yeah.
He wants it. I mean,
that doesn't begin.
Yeah.
No, he's just a social, smart, very good with important people.
Yeah.
Good secretary to the Queen.
Yes.
But
well read, apparently. Apparently well read.
Son of some noble lady.
Yes.
Well born.
Noble but poor. I mean, use of poor aristocracy.
That's right.
He describes it quite.
His mother was a friend of the Queen.
Yes. His mother or the grandmother.
Mother.
He describes it in detail.
He was in Cambridge, wasn't he?
Yes.
In Cambridge.
And read history.
But he's perfect for Nico Henderson.
Yeah. You can see why. I see.
He's a great friend of Heidenfeld, Henderson.
I see.
Absolutely adores him. Adores Heidenfeld. He goes to every party he ever gives.
To adore Heidenfeld?
Adores him. The only man I've met who read it.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
He goes to all the parties, flirts with all the ladies,
I see.
Makes loose remarks. He's not a great man.
I see.
He's a jolly, amusing, quick, clever, sort of careerist.
Even a careerist, I see.
Yes, he is.
All right, I think we shall start. Today I want to clarify some things that crop up in the last meeting. Then, I mean, in one of the future meetings, we'll try to do something chronologically, but I'm not sure we'll manage. We'll see. But beforehand, did Henry Hardy collect all the your articles he could get his hand of?
Yes.
Including all those that he didn't publish.
Yes.
And where is it?
They don't exist. It's just the bibliography. Just about the copies.
Ah, the bibliography I know by heart. I know.
No, no.
But he didn't collect them. I see. I mean,
as far as I know.
I see. Where is he, by the way?
Oxford University Press.
He's in Oxford University Press. I see. Is he an amiable man? Can I?
No.
No.
He's not an amiable man. No. Nice man.
Yes.
But not amiable.
I see.
He's rather quirky. He's stiffish. Can be quite. People think he's rude. He's absolutely honest.
I see.
He's extremely decent.
I see.
He's a gentleman. Mm-hmm. He's perfectly all right. Mm-hmm. But he's brusque. And if I ask him to talk to you, he will.
I see. So
he's all his life he's looked for a biographer.
I see.
And kept on paying his addresses.
I see.
The other people keep on producing.
Really?
Candidates.
Really? I think so. Uh-huh. I see. So maybe it's not a good idea to approach him. We'll see.
He was born for this.
I know, I remember. Yes, I remember. I remember.
Uh-huh. What do you want to approach him?
To ask him whether he could help me, to get access to small articles that I haven't had the opportunity to read.
How could he help you?
When he compiled the bibliography.
There is a reference.
I see. Well, I consult you where to get them. All right.
Fine. No.
Where is the Oxford magazine, by the way?
What?
The magazine that you wrote for in the 30s in Oxford.
Oh, Oxford Outlook.
Yes.
In the Bodleian.
In the Bodleian I can find it. All right. Well, I'll find in the Bodleian, I think,
everything. The Museum Bodleian.
Yes. All right.
I have no copies.
That I know, yeah. Now, when he compiled the bibliography, did you help him, or did he go and...
I think I told him all I knew.
Yes, but...
He discovered much more.
He discovered much more by going through the... Well, probably friends of yours from in the 30s and the 40s sometimes remembered articles that you didn't.
No idea. He attributed, found some articles not by me at all, which he attributed to me.
Yeah, no,
really? Anonymous articles.
Yes, I know.
You sure I read them. For internal evidence.
The ones in the TLS that are anonymous, two or three that are attributed to you.
That I'm used quite a bit.
You did.
I see.
All right. Now, Isaiah, after the last conversation, I came to the conclusion, or I had that hypothesis, that your travel to America in the war was much more, it was a real event in your life, more than I thought. One gets the impression that it starts a new era.
Correct.
Now, is it because, America, you were taken by America, by American people, or was there any a sense of liberation? You going out of Oxford and the family?
No, not consciously.
Not consciously, but now looking at it retrospectively.
Retrospectively, yes. When I went to America, particularly in 1940, during my 6 weeks or 2 months
left, yes.
Completely different world.
Yeah.
Completely. The whole world of embassies, politics, Americans.
Yeah.
Totally different episode. I'm naturally very adaptable. So I adapted quite easily. But it was quite exciting.
Yeah.
And I had a very miserable year in New York in 41.
It was miserable?
Yes. Well, I did my work. First of all, there's nothing to do. Mm. And the job was imaginary. The idea of doing propaganda. Jews, Catholics, all.
Trade unions.
Trade unions. I did it.
Yes.
But on the whole, it didn't take a whole day.
I see.
I mean, there was a lot of free time. Yes. I didn't know anybody. I had some friends in New York. I mean, Burnside, one or two in Columbia, one or two in the office. But broadly, I was all over the place. Washington was 10,000 times more interesting. In every respect.
But one gets the feeling that there is something more to that. That apparently, it is as if the first time you left family,
and
that Oxford, in a way, was too close to maybe pressing. Or
no, in no degree.
No,
didn't press. I felt not the least pressed. When I did the Greenberg, I enjoyed it. But I didn't feel as liberated as something narrow. I may have been so.
Yeah.
But it wasn't conscious, subjective feeling at all. I wouldn't have said,
yes,
I do feel liberated. No.
Well, maybe liberated is a strong word, but
no,
looking at
it
retrospectively...
Sometimes were liberated. People who are bored with their work were liberated by the war. I was not.
No. That I can see.
I had quite an aptitude.
Yes, that's for sure.
I was interested in philosophy. I was a very Oxford Oxford.
I know.
I had no Jewish friends.
Yes, I would think that.
None.
Yes.
There was only one. There was another out.
There's going to be a question about it, yes.
All day down there.
Yes.
I knew it. It wasn't a friend.
Yeah.
And I knew a man called Heber Halpern, who was Georg Halpern's son, who was half Jewish, and who was killed in the war, in Battle of Britain, in the Yemen. But I had otherwise no Jewish friends, except this man I talked to about Rabbi Levitz.
Yes.
He was a Jew. That was all.
He was in London.
Mr. Comtox.
I see. No, I mean, had you agreed that it was, in a sense, a new free air, I would have asked you, one gets the feeling that you were very happy in Oxford.
I was.
But maybe...
I was not confined.
No. So
I was not hemmed in.
Uh-huh. Or, let's say, away from family.
That I liked.
You liked?
Where I came from.
Yes.
I was liberated when I came to Oxford.
I see.
But not when I left. When I left my family, I left my parents' house to come to Oxford as a student.
Yes.
That's a liberation.
That was, I mean,
away from whatever it was, my parents' house,
Yes.
But I wasn't, and after that I didn't see them very much.
I
stayed vacations.
I see.
When I was done, I saw them less and less.
I see. But you are a very devoted son.
Yeah, I was.
So you would come to your parents.
Certainly. Without any effort. Yeah. I enjoyed staying there.
Yeah.
Our relationship perhaps easy.
Yeah.
Completely natural easy. Yeah. But I lived in Oxford. Term and vacation.
Now, is there something in it that you enjoyed practical life, doing things?
Such as?
Diplomacy. Not only teaching.
I didn't know diplomacy.
You did not diplomacy.
I didn't know it.
You see, because you said something that when you came back from Washington, had you been offered a post in the Foreign Office, you might have...
I was.
You told me that you were not.
I was. I said I was. I was offered a job while I was in Washington and after.
So I got you wrong.
Absolutely. I certainly was. I was offered a job when I was in Washington. I was asked if I would, I suppose it wasn't a ready job. I was told that the job I was offered is being head of the librarian for the office, in succession to whoever it was. My was Stephen Gaisley, I think. It was Stephen. And I was told that it would lead if I was made out. If the fellow liked me well enough, in a year or two, I would certainly become part of the service, be sent abroad in a straightforward way, to be absorbed in the Foreign Office on the establishment. I was offered that quite formally, not by the head of the Foreign Office, who was then Kentuckian, perhaps.
Possibly.
The end of the war,
yes. After the war, it was Kentuckian.
Kentuckian and during the war.
The last year. During the war, he was deputy.
Who was there?
Or maybe it was Cadogan. Yes, it was Cadogan.
No, he was Cadogan.
It was Cadogan.
1939.
I see. Yes.
Cadogan and Fortune.
Yes, yes, you are quite right.
No, he was succeeded by Home Sergeant.
Home Sergeant.
I knew very well. Home Sergeant repeated his offer. Also, my uncle David Scott, who is alive, I think, 94, 95, something of that order, who is head of the, who is another secretary, when you quite well. And he repeated his offer to me in 1946. And Michael Wright repeated in 46. Of all people.
You met him in Russia or?
No, in Washington.
In Washington. Ah, you were in
a translator. He was never in Washington.
Yeah.
Never. Never. He was in a translator. I got into some trouble with him. But then his affairs wasn't easy.
Yes,
he knew my views.
Yeah.
I knew his views.
Yes.
You see, I was never shown Middle Eastern documents.
You were not?
Not such. Yeah. I saw the General Telegram, because I know.
Yes.
And I was never given a memorandum. And the actual correspondence, if there was such, in the State Department, as far as I was aware, I never saw. I never saw anything of that sort. I had no executive job.
Yes, I know.
I did not have an executive position. I was a mere reporter and a memorandum writer. That's all I was. I did not negotiate with anyone but anything. But I was then offered the job, they were really surprised that I didn't accept. I refused without slightest hesitation for two perfectly good reasons. One was that I did not be discreet the rest of my life. I did not live two lives.
That's why I didn't accept ambassador first.
To have two lives and not be able to talk about
things.
Second was because I was Zionist. And I realized it would be complicated. Sooner or later. Now, I didn't take a complicated position, say, I don't want to deal with this, I'm not interested, give it to somebody else. I could do it. But I didn't want to have to. For me to work, foreign office, you must have to be clear conscience about this. That's why I thought this man, famous Jew, worked for me. And then went over to Israel Kutz.
Yes, Neville Mandel. Yosef Lamtan.
It was man.
It was, I mean,
man.
It's surrealistic.
Man.
Yes.
It's done by Vorabi.
I know.
And this is Monroe. Because he was a designist.
Yes.
He's probably true.
It's really incredible.
Man.
I can't see why our foreign office accepted it, but
what is he doing now?
He is now in the embassy in Washington. He was
he's
in the United Nations.
He's older.
Yes, yes.
He has new views.
No, no. You're all right, but I think, I mean, To go directly from one foreign office to another,
I agree.
We shouldn't have given our hand to it. I don't know.
No, because it also would have made a better impression on British.
That's what I mean. I thought.
They
I never
Jews.
Understood.
So
I have to, yeah.
No more Jews. There are no more Jews.
There are no more
Jews. Even further. Further, no. Consular service, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. The nearest case was the man in Saudi Arabia.
I remember. Yes, of course. Well, I can't see
so
what...
So let me explain to you. I was liberated in 28. But when I went to Washington, I went to New York first, 1940. Went up with Washington. That was a very muddled period of my life. I didn't do anything. I've told you the story of it.
Yes, but you didn't tell the... You didn't tell me...
I didn't tell the machine.
Yes.
Okay. What happened was this. I better start a little bit of the judges.
All right.
Which is what led to.
Yeah.
I told Mr. Wright.
Yes.
Why shouldn't tell the machine?
Yes.
My life in Washington was due, indirectly, to my friendship with Guy Burgess. I knew him. He was a bright young man at Cambridge. And I met him at lunch in Oxford. He was sent to Oxford to give my friend Boris Barra, who was a brilliant classical tutor in Bodom, who knew a lot of people, artists and literary people and so on, and who enjoyed the society of clever young men. And Mr. Rylands from King's College, Cambridge, who was a literary don, he joined the literary don, sent him to Oxford as a music person. And I went to lunch and he was a music. We talked about this and that. And then he came to Oxford about 2 months later, straight away, and rang me up and said, could we have lunch together? Yes, and I thought he was in very good company. He talked, I had no idea of the economist. Of what quality of India, as an undergraduate at Cambridge, around about 1933. I just could have been in the as well. He was still a student at Trinity. We talked about literature, we talked about like the 18th century literature, we talked about Cambridge gossip, we talked about English politics. I realized he was left-wing, but not more left-wing than everybody else I knew. I mean,
of course.
I packed parcels for Spain.
Yes.
Perfectly happily.
Yes.
Spanish Republic, certainly. You see? And then he did not get a degree, proper degree in Cambridge. He studied at the Institute of Music. He was a great friend of Keynes. He was a friend of, straight from dead. He was a friend of Ian Forster, of course. When he discovered, I discovered he was homosexual. I don't know. That I knew. Later. But he was a kind of a new, till he absconded. Even he was a member of the party, that's an agent. Everybody else knew he was a communist, except me. I can't tell you why. I didn't know Christopher Hill was an open communist.
Yes.
Was one. He was Paul Searles, I made friends with him, he went to Russia, stayed a year, came back exactly as he went, still I didn't know. I knew that we remember the part of him. And then Barry Burgess, he got an ECRA tat, you know what English tat is. He would do 3 papers in the examination and then fall ill.
Mm-hmm.
The papers are good enough to let you pass without a class.
Yes.
Not the first, not the second, not the third, not the fourth. Slip through.
Ah, yes,
is enough not to make you re-examined.
Yes.
That's what he got. He then, next job he had, which is not part of my life, was in the Conservative Central Office, in which he was, the head of which was Mr. Neville Chamberlain, and his colleagues, and then he, I didn't stay there either, that was implanted by the politics, okay. Then he began writing a city letter, of stocks and shares, where he got that information from, that they were probably communist friends in Brazil, in England. And Victor Osler's mother used to take it, and it helped her investment. And by this time he lived a louche life in London, he was obviously homosexual. He had no steady relation with anybody, completely promiscuous. And I've never been in a sort of any of that. My life. And he used to come to Oxford then once a year, perhaps 3 times in 2 years, would telephone me and say, are you in? This is me. Can I come in after dinner? Yes. Can I bring my Swedish friend? No. And he would come alone and I would supply a bottle of whiskey. He talked about the foe. English literature in the 18th century. He talked about George Eliot. He talked about the Cambridge English School. He talked about Dr. Leavis. He talked about Keynes. He talked about Forster. He talked about common friends. Never about politics to me at all. Then, about 1937, I heard he became a member of a thing called Britannia Youth, which was an organization led by the mayor of Hove, when he was, and Brighton, to take young students to Nuremberg for the Parteitag. So he's become an artist. He took all the lectures. Obviously, planted, just as Sylvie went to Spain for the Times, the Franco side.
Yes.
How did I know this? A broke relationship. After the telephone me, he said, no, I didn't have seen. Came 1939. The patron of Burgess at all times was Harold Nicholson.
Harold Nicholson.
Got every job he ever had. Before the war, Lord Perth would be in British ambassador in Rome and the Secretary of League of Nations, as Sir Eric Drummond.
Yes.
Was entrusted by the government with a task in the event of war of creating a unit from which would come, on the one hand, the Ministry of Information, on the other hand, SOE.
Yes.
Harold, they looked for recruits. Harold Nicholson was a very bright young man called Guy Burgess, perfect for it. So he was put in this unit. Naturally, when he was asked to choose the information, the SOE said SOE. SOE didn't exist in 1940.
It was Section D.
It came into being in 41. Yes. It was SIS.
SIS or it, Section D?
Inside the SIS.
Yes.
No, no, it was a...
It was called Section D.
But under the SIS.
Yes, I know.
Right, I'm very curious. I had no job in the war because I was born abroad. Now the civil service couldn't take me officially. When all my colleagues were in various government departments, I sat in Oxford teaching. But in June, I was in New College doing nothing much. The war was not in any good state under the British. About mid-June, I think term was over. There was a knock on my door in the college. I was in a fellow. I left Paul Sills in end of 38. Became a fellow of New College. You asked me why? Because I didn't want constantly, I was a research fellow, Paul Sills. I did not want constantly, so to speak, examination whether I was doing research or not, and if it was any good. If I became a teaching fellow, I would do my duty. If I taught and lectured, what I did with my free time was my affair. I just didn't enjoy being supervised, in the sense of having each 5 years to say how much we published, and so on, why we've not written this or that book. I just didn't want, I was by nature idle. I published a book, Karl Marx. It was not the official topic of my research, which was Hume. I lecture on Hume, I lecture on all kinds of philosophers, but to have sort of constantly give an account of what I was doing, you see, I enjoyed teaching. Crossman was sacked for adultery.
Really?
Certainly. He went off with his... Well, it's an noise. Not part of my life.
Not now.
He went off with another doll's wife. And the warden, Fisher, said to him, you see, all dons in Oxford are appointed for a fixed number of years, have to be reappointed. Normally it's automatic. Yeah. Then when you come to the end of your period from the 38, you will not get them. He was sacked on the spot. But he was told that he would not be reappointed. He didn't say this in various articles you read.
No, no, he puts it in a different way. As if he asked Fisher
whether to
opt for politics.
Not true.
I see.
Absolutely.
I see.
Because Fisher told him.
Yeah.
Fisher took me sent for him. And said, Fisher was not a prig, but he was a prude. On sexual matters, extremely open. No question about it. He was denounced, Crossman, by somebody who lived in the same village, another Don Newport, living in sin, a woman called Mrs. Baker, who was the wife of a zoologist called Baker, and was a member of Commodore Newport, and he was a fellow college. Fisherman quacked him. Before the war, if you were caught living with somebody else's wife, you were sacked. Sometimes after World War II, now no longer. That stopped when Trevor Roper and tell somebody, fun story, and I tell you what I've done my life. When Crossman left, I was appointed this place. We see Crossman taught Byzantine history and philosophy. Unusual. I taught the second half of philosophy. He was half less. When he left, I succeeded to my part, to his part. So there's room for full teaching better. And I think I was the first teaching fellow of a college in Oxford, who was a Jew.
Yes, so
since Alexander.
Since Alexander.
Which was the 90s.
I see.
1890s.
I see.
To make Alexander. Between us, young friend and tutor. Simple. Good art as a professor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, for me.
Yes.
Whatever it was. For the fellow of a college.
Yes.
Another fellow
and tutor.
Another fellow and tutor.
So that Alexander was a fellow and tutor,
public.
And you were,
yes.
And in between there were not Jews. Yeah. We'll discuss.
There were lectures,
yes,
but not fellows.
Yes,
Eitan, Eitinger,
yes, of course,
in
yes.
German, and then I know some of the refugees, of course, the German refugees.
Eduard Frenkel,
for example,
yeah.
The fellow of Corpus, some of the physicists.
Yeah.
No, some of the German refugees were given fellowships. Simon was a physicist. Kuhn was a physicist. Others, there was a refugee physicist in the humanities. I don't think Einstein was born. He was a student of Christchurch for a year or two. He was, at a fee. In one non-scientific subjects, there were such people, Jakob Stadler, Gobi, elite scholars. Was it David Lohan? Don't think about it. Yes, Dr. Venice, musicologist from Vienna, heavily baptized, Jewish origin, to become a fellow Lincoln.
Lincoln, what's his name? Welles?
Velles.
Velles.
W-E-S-Z.
Who was?
Head of the Conservatoire in Vienna.
I see. Musicologist.
If he'd been a Jew, professing Jew.
I see.
Egon Lewis, famous musicologist. But these were exotic quote.
Yeah, of course. I don't want to interfere, but did you teach Greek philosophy then too when you succeeded?
Yes.
You did?
Well, Crossman taught Greek philosophy.
Yes, but when you...
When I did it.
When he lived everything.
Yeah.
Because Greek philosophy is a major question I want to ask you. Not now.
I never knew much about
it. Your attitude of classics in general, it's intriguing.
Well,
but not now.
Well, now. Back to Burgess.
Yes.
Suddenly there was a tap at my door, enter Burgess. And he said, I know what you think of me, but there is an aberration, I'm mad, I do not have any unstable, I do these awful things. Now I'm quite alright again, I've recovered, I'm a member of the Secret Service. And I believe in living in reliable. And they want, and I'm very good, and I've become completely devoted, this country and patron, all that is said. Would you like to be press attaché in Moscow? So I said, look, it's a little square. So I said, why? And they got me. No, they haven't. Quite serious. They did. And for some of them, so he said, nobody does speak Russian. Nobody. So he said, today is June 1940. The idea of getting small bits of British propaganda or connecting Soviet institutions during the Russo-German Pact doesn't seem to me a very practical proposition. He said, never mind. It's very important somebody should go down and speak Russian. Harold Nicholson is number two now.
Information.
I think it's very important. Will you go and talk to him? So I went to talk to him. He said, yes. Well, Guy Burgess is quite right. We must send you to Moscow. Very, very useful. And I hope you so. I've gone into it. You must go and see a young man called Ledwin Jeff. He's private secretary to Gadagin. The foreign office present practice in Drenkley.
Yes.
They followed up his invitation. They went, and I saw him. And a jolly good idea. How would you like to go? United States and Japan, or South Africa and Russia? And all the other countries are at war. Very well, it's thank you. I don't want to see South Africa. Trans-Siberian Railway, I like an agreeable idea. He's really okay. We'll fix that. Now, then you have one other thing. And that is, Guy Burgess wants to come with you as your deputy. You needn't know what he's doing. But this is a car. He's in Secret Service. Don't ask what he's doing.
That's Nicholson, sir.
No.
Oh, no, Jeb, sorry. Yes, sorry.
Jeb. Yes. Not you, you.
Yes.
You go to Swan. And the guy said, well, look, who would you like to come and represent me? I've got a man who said what we're doing. So I had lunch with a very stupid man called Colonel Grand, I think his name.
Yes, you're excellent. Lawrence Grand.
Lawrence Grand, pretty stupid, quite nice.
Yes.
Who said, we're going to get Russia. Well, you know, the Caucasus is the place. That's where they get oil from. If they get in there, the Germans get in there, quite dangerous. People like you have got to stop it. I think they are in a position. Stop it. He took that signals.
But it was SOE. I mean, he was SOE.
He was Burgess's master.
Yes. In SOE. I mean, in the...
There was no SOE.
Yes, in the antecedent of SOE. Yes.
What became
SOE? Precursor of the SOE. Yes. Section P, yes.
Exactly, sir. That's why...
Yeah, no.
I mean,
yeah.
Perfectly relevant to this.
Yeah.
So in the end, I felt not bad about going. Why am I going? I don't understand this whole. I said, look, we'll make you a courier. Give you a courier's visa. I said, no, it's not enough. I was born Russian. They might very well not keep me as a citizen unless you give me a diplomatic visa. It's a problem. So I said, oh well, I'll tell you what you'll do. You can't get one from Meissner. Meissner gave the diplomatic visa to Postel.
Michael Postel.
Who went to Scripps.
Did Postel went to Scripps?
He never got there. Although Meissner gave him a visa, and it stopped in Romania. And he had to get back.
Really?
At that time, he said he was not in the war. You see? Through Italy.
Yes.
Through Romania.
Yes.
At that time, he said he was stopped.
What did Scripps want him for?
Reason, I don't know. Advisory.
How interesting.
Economic idea. And he was Scripps and some of, you know, Crips strategy. And this didn't work.
They didn't work.
You got that. Now, the only man who can do it for you is Umansky in Lombosha. His visas are, I think, he's much better than Meissner. Now, that's all that I've studied before. I never went to the northern department. They took it. I never thought I had to go. They didn't require. The head of that was a man called Collier. And number two was Fitz River Plate. In the northern.
In the northern department.
And John Russell, all these people. Very good. They put on a ship, boat, a Cunard boat, called the Antonia, with Burgess, with a courier's bag, the courier's visa, until they get another visa in Russia. 4 months. So I got on the boat, took 10 days to get to Quebec. We saw icebergs, we were torpedoed, didn't sink. Torpedo went off some hours ago, a lot of people were on the boat, one way or another, we got to Quebec. From Quebec, Burgess and I flew to the train to Montreal. From Montreal we flew to New York. In New York, he immediately went to see Michael Strait.
Who was?
I don't know Michael Strait. Michael Strait. He's the son of he's a rich American man, son of a very rich American family. He was Cambridge, he was a communist. A friend of Burgess, an Austrian agent. And he exposed Blunt. He's a problem.
Yes, now I remember. Yes, in Peter Hyde's book. Yes, yes.
But he's a poor little rich boy.
Yes.
Oh, I don't know. A lot of people like to find out what it is.
Of course.
But anyway,
of course.
The son of a man called Whitney Strait, his brother, was Whitney Strait, who's head of Rolls Royce, and all kinds of things. And what happened was this, you see, he was rather idealistic young socialist, really. And Kennedy wanted to appoint him to be, I don't know what, some cultural person. That meant that he had to be paired with the FBI. Before they did, he told them, when I was Cambridge, the communist Keynes, my great friend, etc. Blunt. Blunt recruited him.
Blunt recruited him to the party or to the
agent? He went to one, when he came back to America, he was an agent, but he refused to go. Someone got out of it. Anyway, that's when they said, are you ready to come and talk to Mr. Blunt about this? Yes, sir. Then he said, hello, Anthony.
Yes.
And so on. And that's, he was the official exposer. After that, Blunt couldn't repeat this.
Yes.
You see? Anyway, he was the man Burgess stayed with. I went to Washington, stayed with my friend Tom Foster, who is legal advisor.
In the embassy?
Was a fellow of all service.
Yes.
So I went to Palestine.
In 1934.
1934.
Yes. What made him go to Palestine in 1934?
Nothing much.
Curiosity. Being your friend?
What?
Being your friend?
No. Your business.
He had already business. Yes. He was a lawyer.
He was a lawyer employed by the Treasury in the famous Ottoman Zayas case.
Uh-huh.
In front of the years.
Yes.
You know the story?
Yes.
Ottoman Zayas wanted to claim
all
the private property for the Sultan.
Of course.
The entire Middle East.
It went on for decades.
It stepped through
sort
of gold mine lawyers.
That's so.
And he was employed by the British Empire.
I see.
So he had some Armenian lawyer.
Yes.
From the same guy. That was his. And he was curious.
Yes.
He was a tremendous Judomaniac. Adored Jews.
Mm-hmm.
You see? So why not?
Yes.
We talked about how we arranged to do it.
Yes.
If we did.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with him.
And it was your first visit.
Yes.
And we'll come to it.
So before, sir?
Yes, we'll come to it.
What?
We'll come to it later.
I was 35, sir.
Yes.
Anyway, he was in Washington, legal advisor. So I stayed with him, naturally. That's how I met various Americans that we knew. In fact, my friend Joe Alsop had just stayed with me.
Joe Alsop, you knew already?
No, I met him at John
Paul. At John Paul.
1940.
Yes.
How could I know?
Yes.
I knew him then.
You knew only Frankfurt then?
Yes. And then in 1940, about 2 days later, Burgess was recalled. Why? Oh, I don't know. He was caught up with... He wasn't sacked. He was sacked from history. But I suppose he must have been... There was nothing against him. It was just that somebody must have said he wasn't allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the closed trip.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was closed. So then he wanted me to go back with him. So I inquired of Foster, should I go back? He said, no. You're going to get a present question. Don't do it. Why shouldn't you go? Except this. And then I went, I sent a telegram to, I had another friend called Anthony Rumberg, son of the...
Old Horace Rumberg.
Yes. Who was the second secretary.
In Washington.
In Washington. The great friend of mine.
I see.
What is that?
Yes.
He's dead now.
I see.
And so...
You knew him from Oxford?
It was him, I think, that I met on trot, 1931.
Oh, 31 already? Yeah. That early?
It was in Rose Color.
Yes.
And so then, I talked to him, and then a telegram was sent with the answer. That was it. I had nothing to do. I was waiting. I was then persuaded, then courage. When I met through Frankfurt, who had dealings with the Department of Interior. He worked for IKIS, the Secretary of Interior. they knew the Russian ambassador. And I said to the embassy, will you get me a visa for Murmansky? They said, we can't do it. They said, no, but they're trying to, very hard. They said, all right, I'll try. See what happens. I was invited to lunch with Murmansky. It was very common. We called Ben Cohen, an undersecretary of the Department of Interior, who dealt with Murmansky for Big Diomede, Little Diomede. These are islands off Alaska, which some dispute in Russia and Japan.
And in America.
That's why Member Oscar Chapman was undersecretary of the Interior.
Oscar Chapman.
Oscar Chapman.
Oscar Chapman.
He gave the lunch. So Ben Cohen brought me. Murmansky was there. No, we all went to lunch in the embassy.
Yes.
Murmansky was a horrible man. He was a Jew. And he worked, I think it was Chicago in KGB, before that. He was killed in the air crash in Mexico. He was just after Washington, Mexico.
I mean, after?
He was ambassador.